It's funny, the moment you start recording, I always hear like a something.
That's just that's my intellect warming up.
Oh, exactly. All these technical terms.
It's vacuum tube radio.
It's still snowing?
Yep.
Still snowing. Yeah. Wow. And it's been a week.
It's been a whole week. It's a constant nothing but snow.
Oh, boy.
A couple of Yetis passed by earlier.
Very nice. Very nice. Well, you do get that weird crap out there.
We
do,
yeah.
Or at least everyone's usually so drunk out by you that they think they see the Yetis.
That is probably also true.
It could just be a hairy guy who's covered in snow, which I resemble that remark. So,
well, you know, I think looking at the population density in the U.S., unless you're on the coasts, it's like the rest of the country on the map, it says there be monsters.
Mm.
Because, you know, it's just nobody ever comes here.
That's true.
And which is fine, coasties. Stay the hell out.
You just want the place all to yourself?
Mm-hmm, pretty much.
All right, you can have it. You can have it. I'm going to stay here. Besides, it would cost too much to ship all of my beer if I had to leave here.
Just that's too much, true.
Yeah. There's too much beer here. That's what the rest of my day has involved in it. I'm not going anywhere. It's supposed to rain and be nasty all afternoon, and I'm just going to sit here and drink beer.
There are worse things, I guess.
I guess there are. Mm-hmm. I'll mix some of the non-alcoholic in there so it's not a complete disaster of a day.
Yeah, good idea.
And my son needs to practice his driving. He got his permit, so he can drive while I sit there and
drink beer. Yeah.
Well, Again,
you're winning the parenting game, Greg.
Well, wow. The beautiful part is I don't have to do the driving. I just tell him where to go.
Nice.
So, yeah, can we start over? I don't like how that all came out. you'll edit that out, right?
Anyway, moving on.
Anyway, so we had such a great response to the first episode of our what do we call it? Our shopping cart, things you don't know you need, I think we called it.
Shit you don't know you need.
Shit you don't know you need.
Yep.
That, you know, we've gone ahead and expanded this thing, and we now have a series of Amazon wish lists, and we're going to get those out there so people can see them. Right now, it's just us looking at them.
Don't buy them off of the wish list.
No,
and they will come to us.
Yes.
We don't need this stuff.
Mm-mm. Nope.
As a matter of fact, I'm still not done getting rid of all the stuff that I bought years ago. So please, no more stuff.
Maybe we should add one more list of, if you're going to buy anything for us, here's the list you should buy it from. And we can put, you know, 3D printer filament and, you know, I don't know.
Anti-anxiety medication.
There you go. Anti-anxiety medication. You know,
heating pads.
Yeah, stuff. Heating supplies. Oh, but are we back to the old man complaints
again?
Still have things hurting?
What do you mean back? Oh, speaking of my back. No, okay. So we're gonna do part two of this list.
Part two. And this is probably not, you know, the finale of this. We'll continue to update this. But the idea being, you know, surf your way through, see if these are things you probably need to have on hand. And if you don't have them on hand, it doesn't mean just go out and buy everything on the list, but think about why you don't.
Right.
And if you've got some ideas we're missing, please tell us.
Yep, absolutely. And some of the stuff you may not even know what it's for. Because you're like, I didn't even know there's a tool for that. Which is kind of where this started, this whole idea of saying, you know what? This is the stuff we found indispensable that people didn't think about. And you may not find them, a lot of the stuff at your local big box store, like garden supply center and things like that. So from a tools perspective.
Oh, sure. And read the descriptions because, I mean, the potassium pocket tester looks just like a home pregnancy test.
It does. Yeah. quite a bit more expensive.
Yes, yes. But even the color scheme, it looks exactly like a home pregnancy test. So
it does.
You don't want to just take a glance and
And all it tells you is yes or no, whether yes or no potassium is present. No, it doesn't do that.
Yes. A plus if there's potassium.
Yeah.
A minus.
Yeah. No, it doesn't do that. Yeah. Uh-huh. But I want to talk, the biggest list that we've got flushed out right now is when the part two is airing is the field tools section. And we didn't even really get around to that.
Nope.
Field tools section. And I started filling this out thinking, okay, what tools did I need for trellis work? What tools did I need for horticulture, weed management, harvesting, just like hand tools and stuff we didn't know we needed until we had it in our hands thinking, oh my God, why didn't I have this before? So let's just start off with that list. Okay. And I think you made mention of this last time, list one. You wanted me to talk about the walkie-talkies.
Yes.
It's facepalm because what the hell? Now, granted, when you're on an acre, do you need walkie-talkies? No, but they're really cool. Certainly when you get up into acreage where you're using other labor to help you out, you can't communicate effectively. Is a real drawback. And people are like, well, I got my phone. I could just like, no, your phone is in your pocket. It's really not the best mechanism to use, tool to use for field communication. So get yourself a pair, or I think I had a set of 4 or 6, because you can buy them in sort of gaggles, rechargeable walkie-talkies. And
is that a real measurement unit, gaggles? I know for geese it is.
Yeah, well, and for walkie-talkies.
It is, okay.
It's not published really anywhere. It's an old term.
Learn something new every day.
Okay. Yep, pre-war. These walkie-talkies, you don't have to go super fancy. I like the ones that have the NOAA radio built in, the weather radio built in, because it'll go off when, like, warning, tornado is going to seriously mess up your day. So I would look for one that has NOAA weather scan and alert. Bright colors and waterproof are also important because you will drop it. Your employees will forget where they put it. Things like that. Range. I mean, unless you're on a 1,000-acre farm, I don't think range is really that big of a deal. I think the one I've got picked out here is like 30-mile range. It's just that, and that's line of sight. Where our farm was, it's like hills and valleys and stuff, so that's greatly diminished. But on some good weather days, I could get in my car and drive over to my house, which is on the other side of the ridge, and still get a signal on my walkie-talkie. Oh, wow. But it's like $50 for two of them.
And you know, it's easy to say, but we've all got phones. Yeah, but these are ruggedized. You can chuck them around and all that. You don't want to have your phone out unless you have to.
Right. And the other thing I like about these is the earpiece. So I added, for this specific model, I included on the list the headset. If I didn't know that I needed a walkie-talkie, I certainly didn't know I needed that. Because I could put this thing in my ear, and it was really comfortable, and I could have it in there all day. And anytime somebody needed me or needed to cue me, I didn't have to fish out a buzzing phone in my pocket and read it when my hands were full. It was also really beneficial to have when I was on the tractor. So I put that in my ear and I put the headphones on, you know, the ear protection, hearing protection on over that, so that if anybody needed me while I was on the tractor, I could actually be contacted. And that's not something you think about until you need it.
Sure.
If you've got a tractor with a cab and you've got, you know, walkie-talkies in there or a CB radio or something like that, that's great. But most of the, certainly the smaller scale folks aren't going to have that. So spend the money, get yourself some walkie-talkies. Again, they don't have to be crazy expensive. And if they don't come with a headset, get them with a headset. I prefer the ones that actually have a microphone that is on like a wire that you can bend around, as opposed to like the dangly ones you get with like your earbuds. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like the microphone's on the cord. For field work, it really doesn't work out all that well. So I would just take that little bendy microphone and like put it down by my jawline. So certainly at least it's picking up your voice a little bit better, but it's not so intrusive. It's not like this big gaming microphone and like you're working for air traffic control.
Sure. And you could always, you know, tape it with some tape to your forehead and then, you know, break into some show tunes. It'll be just like you're on stage.
Exactly. You know, Britney Spears the hell out of that.
Oh yeah.
So those two things are definite must-haves for those of us who have folks working with them in the field. They came in especially handy during harvest when I'm coordinating a field cut crew, a transport crew, and a harvest harvesting building crew. And you have enough of those so that enough communicators, walkie-talkies that you can talk to, you know, the leads of each one of those teams, and everybody's in communication. Mm-hmm. And that was quite handy. Certainly kept the machine of doing really well lubricated. So cannot stress that one enough.
Nice.
Yep. Nice. Love it. And more than one occasion, the NOAA radio thing came in really handy. So to have, don't discount that. If you don't have, God, it's another one. Every time we do this, put another one on the list.
More things, yeah.
Well, you need a weather alert radio. Have it in the barn, have it in your head house or your office or wherever. But you're working in the environment. You're working with Mother Nature. And yeah, we have a good idea and we keep an eye on the weather. But having that weather alert radio is, I think, much more valuable. You can have them set up to go off every hour with a weather report. And it's in North America. They're coming out of NOAA, the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration. So this is the most accurate scientific weather data you're going to get. This isn't like checking in telecast on your phone or WeatherBug or your local news station. So this is, if you're really keyed into what the weather's going to be for your micro area, look to get a dedicated weather radio. And again, they're cheap. They're $20. I mean, come on. No big deal.
Yep.
Okay. That one's not on the list, but I'm making a note to add a weather radio to the list.
5 minutes in, we've already got
5 minutes. I know. Yeah. This is what happens. This is how I spend my Saturday nights, folks. I just go virtual shopping and add things to the list.
Nice.
What do I want to talk about? Oh, let's talk about sharp things.
Ooh, machete.
Well, sort of. And these two tools I didn't know I needed until I had a field tech. His name was Dua Vang, and he was from he's Hmong, and so he was from the Cambodia, and he was in his late 50s, or he's in his early 60s. And he was trying to tell me, his English was okay, but he was trying to tell me what tool I needed, and I didn't understand what he was talking about until like a week later he comes back with this thing. It's called a billhook. I'm like, what the hell is this, right? So it looks like a machete that somebody took and melted the end and bent it over into a hook. All I have to say is a billion Asian farmers cannot be wrong.
Mm-hmm. And because, it does say here, it does look like a sickle combined with a machete. It's, yeah.
Exactly. Huh. And the inside edge is sharp. So not the outside curve, but the inside curve is sharp. And this is for, you know, like people see, you know, like movies or TV shows of people using a machete to hack their way through a like jungle. That is like the worst machete usage ever. Don't use that as an idea of what a machete is supposed to be good for, because I think most people get them. They try to use them. They think they're going to work like that, and they don't. And then they sit in the back of the barn and just gather dust. So this billhook type sickle machete is really meant to be used with two hands. One hand's holding the machete. The other hand is holding whatever it is that you want to cut. And you're using it sort of in a cutting motion, like you're cutting back towards yourself almost. And it sounds dangerous as hell. He's like, well, why wouldn't I cut away with it? You could do that too. It's that inside hook that, as you're sort of yanking that thing through the material that you're trying to cut, causes it to, it captures the material and slices through it really, really quickly. You can get these in various sizes. The one I picked out here is sort of a mid-size. We use these for everything from chopping out weeds, like really weeds that we let go too far and they got really woody, to using them to cut binds at the base for harvest. And you've got like four or five, you know, really woody binds and some twine in there. You could take a regular machete and hack at that sumbitch for a half an hour and still not get through it. But if you grab that bind and with your left hand and took that billhook in your right and you went through it, if it's sharp, one swipe, you're through it.
Nice.
And like, where have you been all my life?
and the best review, I'm looking at the product here on Amazon, the best reviewer, the title of his review on this, it says, not just cool. And the description is, this would give Jason Voorhees nightmares and Freddy would run like a scared bitch. Welcome to your nightmare.
It is awesome. And when properly kept sharp, and we can talk, I could do a whole episode on how to keep your tools sharp. Mm-hmm. Holy crap. With all of our tools in the field, if it had an edge like a blade, whether it's a lopper or a machete or a knife or anything like that, everybody had a diamond sharpening stick, because the most dangerous knife or blade is the one that's dull.
Oh, sure.
If you have it sharp and you keep it sharp, it's going to do what you want and it's going to go where you intend it to. Same thing with loppers. Keep them sharp. And it's another thing I got to add. Son of a gun. Okay. I'll add that too. Sharpening equipment. So bill hook.
Oh, yeah.
But a bill hook is great. It's really good at doing one thing. I love tools that are like purpose designed. They've been honed figuratively and literally for hundreds and hundreds of years, and they do one thing really good. But, you know, being modern American animals, we can't leave well enough alone. So I put on here something called a Fisker's clearing hook. And it's sort of like a combination of a bill hook that I just talked about, but it's a little bit more robust. You could like use it like an axe if you had to, and go, and so you got some saplings you need to go cut, or you need to really go at it. I think it's the best of both of all worlds, between a machete, like a little hand axe, and a bill hook.
And this has like a sawing edge as well, it looks like.
It's got a sawing edge on it too. So not all of us need like brush clearing kind of sidearms, so to speak. But I found this thing handy when dealing with general farm maintenance kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Clearing fence lines and keeping saplings down and just that kind of stuff. It's kind of a nice to have. If I had to choose one of the two, I'd take that bill hook sickle, because it was more immediately impactful to the hop production aspect. But that clearing hook was also handy just to keep it around the farm.
And that clearing hook, I mean, if I'm looking at the sizing correctly, is more of a belt tool.
Yep.
That you can just have with you at all times. The bill hook, it seems you're going out there with purpose. That's that's not just, you know what I mean? You're not just, that's not hanging around with you at all times, whereas the clearing hook can be an almost an everyday carry.
Yep, pretty much. And that's something that I would have thrown in the back of the UTV or something like that. It's just sort of like, you're going out in the field, it should be in the truck too. Where the bill hook is, more mission specific. Mm-hmm.
Nice.
So, yeah, I like those a lot. Let's talk about trellis tools, since we're talking about field stuff. I don't know how you as a grower actually strung your cable and got them tight, and how you continue to tighten them, but you need two things, regardless of how you're doing it. You need a way to apply force, and you need a way in order to connect that force physically to the cable. So some sort of a clamp or a grip and some sort of a tensioning device. So the easy tensioning device everybody thinks of is what we call a come along. It's a hand operated winch, basically ratchet powered. So it's got a hook on one end, a hook on the other end, and it pulls stuff. That's what it does. You're using the power of leverage, physics at work, to apply tension. And they come in different ratings. Tons capacity. Do not skimp on this. If you see one at your local big box store, it's like, oh, 2 ton. Yeah, that's plenty. Oh, 2 tons. That's a lot. Bullshit. It's not enough. Nope. 5 ton minimum. And I think we actually had 2 9 ton units that we used for our big trellises. You need.
Now, I'm curious, why 2? Did you need to do counterpoint force at times?
No, I just had a lot of tensioning to do, so might as well have 2 crews out there
doing
it. You really only need one of these things, and you're going to use it to apply tension. So how are you going to get that tension connected to, the energy connected to your cable? And that's where these cable grips come in. They call them pulling tools, wire rope grips, all sorts of stuff. The ones that I had were from a company called Klein, Klein. And there's different geometries to these grips depending on what kind of cable you're trying to pull and tension. The ones that I put in this list are what they call cam grips. And that's exactly what it is. It's an offset cam. So this sort of arced piece of metal with teeth in it that really only makes connection with the anvil, the other side of the clamp, in one place. So it's providing very, very high gripping pressure to a very small surface area. Use those. Do not use, you'll see parallel jaw clamps where they're like 6-inch long jaws and they're offset. And when you apply force to the clamp, these jaws come parallel to each other such that they're spreading that load all the way over like a 6-inch long jaw. Don't use those. Those are for like soft, like vinyl coated utility cables and fiber optics and that kind of stuff. Don't use those. Use these like cam dealies. They work out really, really well.
They're pricey.
Well, they are pricey because they are safety rated. So anytime you're getting into like dealing with tensioning anything, they have to go through extensive ANSI safety ratings. So they're going to be spendy, but I don't have a problem spending $100 on a cast iron zinc cadmium plated tool that's going to last me forever if it's so critical to my infrastructure.
Sure.
They come in different sizes depending on the cables that you're playing around with. I put two different sizes on here. I put one that goes up to, I think, 1/4 inch. So for the smaller hop yards, you can fit up to 1/4 inch cable wire rope into this thing. And the other one is bigger. It goes up to 3/4 inch, which is massive. You could probably get away with one that goes up to 1/2 inch for some of the larger yards, but it gives you an idea that they span in range and they for cable size, and they also span in weight limit tonnage. So like the big one, the 3/4 inch cable size goes up to, was it 8 ton, I think?
Wow.
Hell, 8,000 pound. So four ton. And the other one's 2,500 pounds. So not nearly enough, but for a small trellis, that might be enough. A 1-acre trellis is probably fine. But certainly if you're going to need to be applying more force, even to that same cable, same size cable, but more force, you're going to need a stouter clamp to get her done.
Yep. And you know, the pictures on here are misleading until you dive into the products and you see a picture of it next to a person. Yeah. These look like they fit in the palm of your hand when you look at the list and you go, oh my God, look how much money this costs. How many of these things do I need? And then you go in and look a little deeper. These are large.
Yeah. Yep. And you would expect it. I mean, they're proportional to the size of the force that you're applying.
Now, to help people pick these out, and I know you mentioned Klein Tools, they do say that these are where conductor damage is not a factor. What does that mean?
So if you are using this to pull an electrical cable, you want something that's not going to damage the conductor. Ah. So I talked about those parallel jaws. That's what the parallel jaws are for. They don't damage the conductor because they're applying pressure over a much larger surface area, where these specific examples that I want you to use for wire rope, they provide very high force to a very small area, so point load, in order to get a really, really good grip.
I imagine you can go down the wrong path and spend a lot more if you end up purchasing something that's rated for conductor.
Correct. Use. Absolutely. Yeah. You can spend 2 to 3 times the cost of one of these other ones. Okay. So
keep your eyes open for that.
Yep, yeah. Get the right one. We had... How many of these do you need? Really, one? I had two of each size because sometimes we found ourselves needing to pull two ends of cables together. And so you need to actually use that come along, that winch, and have a clamp on two ends of the cable. So it's like no loop or eye or anything you can grab onto. So then you'd need a clamp on each cable to pull them together. But aside from that, most smaller scale folks in the, you know, are not going to need any more than one of these. Handy dandy. And staying in that same area of cable tools is something to cut the wire rope with. And I think anybody who's dealt with any of our growers dealing with, you know, wire rope or cables, I mean, this stuff's a pain in the ass to cut. Because it's like, what do you use? Well, I could use an angle grinder with a cutoff disc on it and cut through it, which I have done. I could use bolt cutters, which are what we call anvil type jaws, right? They don't bypass each other. They just come together They're super high hardened steel because they're good for cutting through bolts and padlocks. They're not so great for cutting through cable because the cable deforms too much. And you end up mangling it and squishing it, you know, sort of like trying to cut a tough steak with a butter knife. It just doesn't work out well.
No.
If we look at the right tool for the right job, it's a wire rope and a cable cut. Wire rope and cable cutter. And you can get their manual. Some of them actually have telescoping handles, so you can get more leverage on them. But they are bypass. So they're actually shearing. They're not crushing. They're shearing the cable. Highly hardened, extremely sharp. They're spendy. The one I got picked out here is a 28-inch wire rope cable cutter. It's $83 and change. If you've got a lot of cable to deal with, if you're just getting started putting up your trellis and you're like, yeah, I'm putting up 5-acre blocks at a time, spend the money because damn, the amount of time you're going to be wrestling around with it, and certainly if you're paying people, get the right tool to get the job done quickly. And
sure,
this thing's going to last you a lifetime.
And, you know, just like you mentioned about making sure your knives are sharpened because a dull knife is the most dangerous tool in your arsenal. It's the same thing here. If you're using the wrong tool, if you're having to overly force something, then you got the wrong tool in front of you.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I would agree with that.
It's dangerous. It's time consuming. There's a whole lot of reasons that the tool should do the work.
Right. Agreed. I think that covers that section of field tools that I've got so far.
Yep. Yep.
Populated here. Let's see. What else do we want to talk about? Let's go to the chemistry section again.
Okay.
Because the last time around, we talked about...
We spent a lot of time talking about not taking your wife's kitchen scale.
Oh, right. Yep. And not using your mouth to pipette agrochemicals. I remember talking about that, too.
Yes. Yes.
Unless you're James, which helps to explain those strange tics that I have.
I was going to say I don't remember having that conversation, but it's probably from doing it one time too many.
Right. So we talked about like agrochemical handling kind of stuff, right? Pipettes, scales, Pyrex glassware. What we didn't talk about was like plant nutrient measuring tools. Mm. And we talk quite a bit here and there, usually at the beginning of the season, about taking tissue tests and monitoring for nutrition to know how to change up your fertilizer scheme. That's all fine and dandy to take those samples and send them in to get tested, because you're going to get a much broader range of nutrients than anything you're going to have in kind of a field measuring device. Those tests aren't cheap. It takes time. It's not something that you get a turnaround on very quickly. There may be some options for you. So there's a company called Horiba, Horiba, that I really like. They make a wide range of electronic plant nutrient testers. And what you're doing is you're taking part of the plant. Usually it's a petiole, so it's the stem that's coming off a leaf. And you're crushing it to get the sap out. And that sap is what you're measuring in these devices. Each device measures a different nutrient. And you're like, oh man, so I have to have like 12 of these things? No, you don't, because they don't. Actually, you can't measure some nutrients using these kind of devices. But you can measure the major ones that you need to be mostly concerned with. And the two that I picked out was potassium and nitrogen, specifically nitrate nitrogen. That's going to, obviously, nitrate nitrogen tells you, well, frankly, do you have enough nitrogen to your plant? Is your plant in the right range for optimum growth? Potassium obviously does the same thing, but they're quite a bit different in price. And these are not cheap tools. So I would say for the casual grower and the hobby grower, this is not something you're probably going to invest in, because like the nitrate meter is like $550. Oof. And the potassium meter is $300. And these are, think of them as laboratory pieces of equipment. They're highly sensitive pieces of equipment. They need calibrated, they need cared for. But people talk about wanting to optimize their system and how do I get my yield up and how do I do this, that, the other thing. These are one of the tools that you can use to do that. Or you can take samples every day and send them in and get tested. And what's that going to cost you?
Yeah.
$50 or $60 a pop. granted, you're going to get more data back than just nitrate, but if that's all that you're after, you need to be thinking about what you can do in-house that's going to really matter to you. And the two that I picked out here, like I said, one's potassium, one's nitrate, will help you dial in on your plant nutritional needs in situation, in situ, so that you can respond quickly and not lose the season. To look back later, which usually happens, people say, well, I didn't get the yield I wanted. Show me your nutrient data. Show me your your leaf tissue analysis. I look at it, I'm like, you took this at burst stage. Well, yeah. I'm like, it's too late. How could you be expected to respond? Well, you know, I got to take it and I send it in and I don't get results back for 2 weeks. Well, there's your problem.
Yeah.
if you're going to use plant sap analysis to help drive your current season operations, you need to invest in the right tools. If anything, these two are the ones I would look at. And people say, well, geez, I can't afford, I'll get the potassium because it's cheaper. Yeah, that's probably not the way to go. If you're looking to dial in your production and really boost your yields and understand your plant nutrition needs, go with the nitrate. There may be some less expensive models out there, and there may be some models that read up to a higher range. So this nitrate one goes up to just under 10,000 parts per million.
Sheesh.
Yeah. So it was at just under 1%. But you could be, I've seen, you could max that out. You could peg that digital needle, so to speak, because hops take up so much nitrate. So wouldn't be at all too surprised, but it's certainly going to help you tease out whether you're too low, which is more of a problem. That's what we're after. So don't cheap out here. If you're going to do this, if you're going to take your game, your hop production game to the next level, this is what you need. And it's just not with hops. If you're growing berries, and I know Gabe down in Brazil is got a berry farm too, and perfect. You can use these same things for those crops to help dial in their requirements as well. So again, not necessarily for hobby growers, but certainly something for the pro grower and the aspiring pro grower to build up your repertoire of big girl and big boy tools.
Big boy and big girl tools. Nice.
Yeah. And I mean, granted, we're using Amazon here because it's just accessible to everybody. There are other companies that make these that may be more precise for your needs. If you are interested in that, you can contact me and I will help guide you to some of these other companies that make these meters. They're just not going to be available on Amazon.
Nice. And that is not a cheap piece, to your point.
Mm-mm. Nope. A lot of things I see, people say, well, what about soil chemistry? Should I get one of those really fancy, I don't know if you've ever seen these things. I thought about putting one on here, but then I'm like, I don't know about that. There's these really fancy soil test kits, and they come in this big black briefcase. And you open it up, and you're like, oh my God, look, all these test tubes and packages of powders and different chemicals, and I can be, you know, Mr. Wizard out in the in the hop yard doing my soil analysis, and really I'm gonna be on my game, and look, it's only $150. Right. And that's for soil analyses. And I've often told people, as soil sampling, soil testing, soil nutrition is a great barometer on the broad scale, but it doesn't tell you about what's actually getting into the plant. You can speculate based on what you're seeing coming out of the soil, but you get, if you don't know how to interpret the data coming out of these tests, you're like, I don't know. I don't know what that means. Is that pinkish purple or purple pink on that colorimetric test? Because all these are colorimetric, right? So they mm-hmm. produce a color. You have to match them up against a scale. In a laboratory, we're not doing that. We're actually measuring ions. We're doing an elemental analysis to get an actual number. And these field soil test kits are more about getting you in the ballpark to see whether there's an issue.
Oh, it's like a fish tank test for all your different metrics. You've got the little color scale.
That's exactly what it's like, except it's for, 15 different nutrients and pH and all kinds of stuff. They're cool. And as a gadget guy, I think they're really neat. But if I'm going to spend my, if I'm concerned about where I'm spending my pennies, if I'm going to up my sci-tech game for toys, look to a plant sap meter, and you're going to do way better for yourself. Another brand is called Cardy, C-A-R-D-Y, Cardy meters. And for the longest time, they were like the only game in town. And they're used heavily in the greenhouse industry for testing plant sap. But you can get them for calcium and sulfur and phosphorus and all kinds of stuff. Nitrate is just happens to be a very tricky molecule to measure. And the sensor that is required for it uses palladium and platinum.
Ooh, boy.
So, yeah. So they tend to be spendier, which also means you better damn well take care of it. Because if you need to replace the sensor, you're going to be spending like $300 on top of the $500 you already spent.
Jeez. So,
yeah. Spend your pennies on this, not some bullshit hop moisture meter that doesn't work.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we could do an hour on you know, soapboxing on moisture meters.
Oh, maybe we should have Dan back and he can do that.
Oh, he could. We could just let him roll.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he hasn't been on in a while.
No. He's got to sober up from the last time.
Oh, yeah. Which was like a year and a half ago.
Yeah. So he probably needs a little more time.
Yeah. Probably pretty good. I'm looking here. What else have I not included?
You've got some basic barn tools here. That list is just getting started.
Yeah, just getting started on that one. We talked about the everyday carry in the past. I've fleshed that out just a little bit more. Not too much. Most of those items are still the same that we had on there. Mm-hmm. I could talk about barn tools just because we've got a few minutes left here. Some of the things that we use the most. The first thing is you need to get yourself a reasonably well-made set of battery-powered construction tools. I'm a black and yellow kind of guy myself, but the red and the orange and the green, all that, whatever. But you don't want to cheap out on these because they're going to get beat to hell. They're going to get dropped in the mud. They're going to be left out in the rain. They're going to be... So I would recommend getting a set. I think of the set I had picked out, I picked out specifically because it came with a battery-powered angle grinder.
Ah.
And that is got to be, so far, the best invention of modern humans. The polio vaccine was good. Don't get me wrong. The battery-powered angle grinder, holy crap. I think the angle grinder is probably the most versatile tool I've ever used. I think I've got 4 or 5.
Oh, gosh.
But, swap out the disc for whatever it is. You know, you want to grind, you want to cut. Is it steel? Is it glass? Is it wood? It doesn't matter what it is. It'll go through it. And the fact that you can get a stout battery on it that will last you a good while is indispensable. So you can take it out in the field because you're like, holy crap, what is it? Why is that piece of metal sticking up? Like, what is going on here? I got to cut that off. Then you're like, how am I going to do that?
I was just going to say, I mean, there are the other thing to consider here is that when you do go – you know, down a path, and you mentioned, you know, the yellow, the red. I mean, there's obviously this DeWalt, this Milwaukee, there's this Ryobi, there's all these different things. Pick one and stick with it because you do not need 6 different kinds of batteries littering up your garage or wherever you are charging these things. Get extra batteries because you're going to need to be flipping these out multiple times a day.
Yep. And the batteries that come with these things, like currently, like if I take the DeWalt 20 volt, they're all 2 amp hour batteries. They're small. Mm-hmm. And frankly, a 2 amp hour battery and a 20 volt circular saw is going to maybe cut through a sheet of 1/2 inch plywood once. So if you're going to be using heavy, you know, tools heavily like that, that require a lot of power, you're going to need 5 and 6 amp hour batteries. And as anybody who has battery powered tools knows, the batteries are the expensive part.
Yes.
But get these things. I would say of anything, impact driver and drill. Absolute must haves. The battery-operated angle grinder saved my bacon more times than I can count. And these just happen to be in a kit, so that's why I picked it. But get whatever the hell it is you feel comfortable with getting. I don't care.
Yeah, and I would say if you start and you like the brand and it's working well, you just stick to it so you're not going multiple battery brands all over the place. Which, to your point, the batteries are what's expensive, and you don't need to have 3 backup batteries for the one tool that you bought in a different brand that everything else is.
Yep, correct.
It's just silly.
If it's a quality brand, frankly, their performance is all going to be about the same.
True.
From the actual mechanics of the thing, the battery technology is where the money is. And so don't skimp out on that. Mm-hmm. And then lastly here, real quick, is an air compressor. And I put a small one on here because air compressors get really expensive really quick. So I just put a small, like, 20-gallon Porter Cable one on here. And some inflation devices. Or one I got picked out right now, obviously, is just for tires and inflating things. But you're like, well, duh, why wouldn't I have that? I'm like, yeah, you're saying, well, duh, because I'm mentioning it to you now. But you, Kevin, wouldn't have done it unless I said so.
Mm-hmm. We're talking to you, Kevin.
Kevin, that's you. So you want to have those sorts of things on hand. I would also use like an impact driver or things like that for my air tools, working on bigger tractors and pieces of equipment like that. But having that air compressor handy, it becomes second nature. It's like, well, it's sort of one of the things I have to have here. And if you have a small yard, you can use it to blow out your air lines if you've got freezing issues in the winter and all that good kind of stuff. So, but look for the barn tool section to grow dramatically as I remember more critical things you need to have.
Mm-hmm. And really, for this section in particular, I mean, it's no surprise that you would want to wrap things up talking about hot air.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm most full of.
You'll edit that out, right?
I'll